It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Liberia praises U.S. anti-Ebola effort, urges world community to do likewise. World Bank warns of economic cost of the virus. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf Wednesday welcomed President Obama's announcement the U.S. is stepping up its assistance in the fight against Ebola. She called on the rest of the international community to respond in kind. Her information minister is Lewis Brown.
The entire community of nations has a stake in ending this crisis. The people of Liberia have suffered greatly since this disease took hold. But we are a strong and resilient people. As their president, I will not rest until we defeat Ebola. To Liberians, my message is simple. We are fighting back.
The U.S. plan announced Tuesday includes a regional command and control center in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, building a new treatment center, dispatching thousands of military personnel, including healthcare workers, to the region, and training. Meanwhile, the World Bank Wednesday warned fear of the deadly disease is choking off economic activity and with potentially catastrophic results. The bank says farming, mining, and manufacturing are among the economic sectors suffering. The bank warns Liberia's growth could plummet more than 11% next year, nearly 9% in Sierra Leone and over 2% in Guinea. The International Monetary Fund Wednesday said it's preparing $127 million in zero-interest loans to all three countries to deal with the rising health and security expenses brought on by Ebola. This is VOA News. A French staff member with Doctors Without Borders has contracted the Ebola virus while working in Liberia. The nurse, the first French national to come down with the illness, has been quarantined and will be transported back to France. In the United Kingdom, former nurse Ruth Atkins has become the first of 60 people to receive an experimental Ebola vaccine to test its safety. The testing is being conducted at Oxford University, where Adrian Hill, director of the Jenner Institute, says the vaccine is being fast-tracked.
We've done over 100 vaccine trials in this center in Oxford, and typically if we got started in 6 months, we'd do very well. This time that's all happened in 4 weeks. So this is as fast as anybody has ever seen a trial commence, particularly a trial of a vaccine that's never been given to a human being before.
The vaccine is the result of a collaboration between the U.S. government and GlaxoSmithKline. Health officials in East Africa met in Nairobi Wednesday to discuss preparations for containing Ebola. James Macharia is Kenya's health minister.
One of the main reasons for having this session today was to discuss with all the countries so that we see if there are gaps in individual countries, because we have to look at ourselves as one block. If there's Ebola in any of those countries, it means we are exposed. And so it was critically important to go through the plans country by country. So we determine if there are gaps in certain countries, and therefore as a region, decide how to close those gaps.
The most recent outbreak in West Africa has killed nearly 2,500 people. An attack Wednesday on a teacher training college in northern Nigeria killed at least 15 people and wounded dozens more after gunmen opened fire at a lecture hall. This witness said the attackers first stormed the main gate.
The people come from the main gate and enter the new site, that is Art and Social Sciences. From that gate, they used to even shot people from with gun. Any person that they were seen, they would shoot him.
Two attackers were killed by police, including one who was strapped with explosives. Authorities told VOA other suspect escape. There has been no claim of responsibility, but it resembles two suicide bombings carried out by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram on school campuses in Kano in July. The death toll from last Friday's building collapse in Lagos, Nigeria, has now risen to 70. The cause of that collapse of the structure, which housed the Synagogue Church of All Nations, remains under investigation. Libya's acting Prime Minister, Abdullah Althini, named a new cabinet Wednesday to be approved by the parliament later. Elected back in June, that parliament meets in Tobruk after Islamist militia took over the capital, Tripoli, and battled for control of the country's second-largest city, Benghazi. Those fighters launched another offensive Wednesday, aimed at the city's airport. Meanwhile, in Madrid, an international meeting on the security situation in Libya rejected the idea of military intervention, saying there is no military solution to the crisis in Libya. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf thanks President Obama for additional U.S. support to fight Ebola.
On behalf of the Liberian people and in my own name, I want to thank President Obama and the American people for scaling up the American response.
The United Nations Security Council will hold an emergency Ebola meeting today, Thursday. A U.S. official tries to allay fears that Ebola can become airborne. South Sudan's foreign minister says his country will not expel foreign workers. And Lesotho's prime minister refuses to reopen parliament.
The foreign minister did not in any way act illegally when he prorogued parliament that is provided for in the constitution of Lesotho.
Thabo Takalekwala is the spokesman for Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. A U.S. official assures the people of Central African Republic of U.S. assistance at their time of need. And President Obama says no U.S. ground war in Iraq. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has thanked President Barack Obama and the American people for their additional offer to help Liberia and other West African countries where nearly 2,500 people have died from the Ebola virus. In a nationwide speech late Wednesday, President Sirleaf said she was also in touch with other world leaders to take similar steps and join Liberia and other West African countries to end Ebola.
On behalf of the Liberian people and in my own name, I want to thank President Obama and the American people for scaling up the American response. I have also spoken to several members of the U.S. Congress who are giving President Obama the support that he needs. We remain in touch with leaders of other governments and with the United Nations leadership to take similar steps and join us in partnership to end this disease.
President Sirleaf said while her government and the international community will continue to ensure that the spread of the Ebola virus is reversed, she also called on Liberians to do their part because she said the actions of one affect the health of the whole nation.
We'll continue to take clear actions and introduce the measures required to break the transmission chain and reverse the spread of the virus. And you, our citizens, must do your part. Each one has to be responsible for all, because the action of one affects the health of all. We'll continue to ask for international help, but until we take responsibility of this problem, as individuals, as families, as neighborhoods, as communities, as districts, as counties, and as a nation, this problem will not go away. Especially in this regard, the next few months will be crucial in this fight.
President Sirleaf thanked Liberians, particularly nurses and doctors, who she said could have fled but made the brave decision to stay and treat Ebola patients.
Particularly the nurses and doctors who could have fled but have made the brave decision to stay and treat the sick. Our sons who are doing the physically and emotionally draining work of collecting bodies. Our nation, our people are forever grateful to all of you, and we expect to announce early next week that this gratitude goes beyond words. To our security forces who provide the protection as others serve, to the AFL who will return to the barracks at the end of the month and will work with the U.S. military in engineering work, and the LNP and the BIN who will continue to carry on with the responsibility to protect, we say thank you.
President Sirleaf called on Liberians to use the same fighting spirit and resilience that they displayed during their 14 years of civil war to fight back and defeat Ebola. The UN Security Council will hold an emergency meeting today, Thursday, on containing the spread of the Ebola virus, which has killed nearly 2,500 people in West Africa. As viewers Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations, the Council, which deals with threats to international peace and security, has previously discussed only one other public health crisis, HIV/AIDS.
The World Health Organization reports nearly 5,000 cases of the hemorrhagic fever-like illness in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, with Liberia being at the epicenter of the outbreak. Nigeria also has reported 21 cases with 8 fatalities. Several airlines and shipping companies have stopped servicing these countries out of fear of infection, although medical experts say the current strain is only transmitted through direct contact with the body fluids of an infected person or a deceased victim. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon again this week urged the lifting of travel bans, saying it is slowing the crisis response.
We need isolation of people affected by Ebola, not of nations struggling to cope with it.
The United States has been at the forefront of the growing international response, with President Barack Obama announcing Tuesday that he will send to the region 3,000 military personnel, as well as medicines, equipment, and other critical tools for fighting the outbreak. The U.S. holds the rotating presidency of the U.N. Security Council this month. Ambassador Samantha Power has called an emergency meeting for Thursday to discuss the matter and vote on a resolution calling on nations to quickly send aid, field hospitals, and health workers to affected countries, as well as lift travel restrictions to those areas. She said she hopes countries participating in the session will come with firm commitments.
We can contain this. We know how to do it, and we must avoid panic and fear. But our collective response to date has not been sufficient. We must move forward aggressively in a coordinated fashion and together.
At the meeting, Secretary General Ban and World Health Organization Chief Dr. Margaret Chan will outline their international action plan to contain the threat. Also, next week, on the margins of the UN General Assembly's annual debate, the UN chief will lead a high-level meeting on the needs of people in Ebola-affected countries.
This is not just a health crisis. It has grave humanitarian, economic, and social consequences that could spread far beyond and affected countries.
The UN's top envoy in Liberia, Karen Landgren, told the UN Security Council last week that Ebola's spread has outpaced that government's ability to respond. Landgren warned that the potential for political instability exists. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
As the Ebola epidemic continues to spread unchecked in Western Africa, fears are beginning to emerge that the virus could mutate and the disease could become airborne. But some experts say the chances are remote that Ebola could spread from person to person through the air. VOA's Jessica Berman has more.
As the number of people infected with Ebola has soared in Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea, Nigeria, and Senegal, with more than half of the estimated 4,300 cases resulting in death, some infectious disease specialists have expressed concern the disease could acquire a new, more terrifying mode of transmission through inhalation, much like the common flu bug. People become infected with Ebola by coming into contact with the contaminated bodily fluids, primarily blood and saliva, of infected individuals. In a New York Times opinion piece, biosecurity expert Michael T. Osterholm noted that viruses like Ebola are notoriously sloppy in replicating, which means that each new infection presents the possibility of trillions of genetic changes. Genetic mutations to bacteria and viruses are common. They are the result of small mistakes that occur in the DNA of a microbe in the course of replicating. But rarely, says Dr. Anthony Fauci, does a virus mutate to the point that it changes how it spreads from person to person. In testimony Wednesday before a U.S. congressional committee hearing on Ebola, Fauci, the head of the U.S. Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, commented on that possibility.
It generally, if it changes a function, modifies an already existing function. It makes it either a bit more virulent or a bit less virulent. It makes it a little bit more efficient in spreading the way it usually spreads, or a little less efficient.
Having said that, Dr. Fauci warned the longer the Ebola epidemic continues in Africa, the greater the chance the virus will acquire mutations.
If this virus keeps replicating and keeps infecting more and more people, you are going to give it more of a chance to mutate. So the best possible way that we can take that off the table is to actually shut down this epidemic.
Experimental drugs have been used in some cases to treat Ebola patients, but care is mostly supportive. In the absence of a cure, efforts continue to try to contain the virus through quarantine, limiting travel to other countries, and public curfews. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 18th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane says he will not reopen Parliament as demanded by the Southern African Development Community, SADC, until a renegade army general is arrested and made to face justice. Thabo Takalikwala, spokesman for Prime Minister Thabane, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the renegade army general is to blame for the country's growing insecurity.
We fully understand the concern of SADC that the Parliament of Lesotho should be reopened so that the democratic process in this country could go on. But the Prime Minister is insistent and adamant that we cannot open Parliament until the security situation is brought under control, until the renegade general is brought before the court of law.
Some people are suggesting that Prime Minister Tom Thabane is the problem at the moment because he suspended Parliament, and mediator suggests that opening Parliament is a big step to resolving the sharp disagreement within the coalition. So his refusal to do that basically perpetuates the tension, the disagreement, and perpetuates instability in Lesotho. What do you say to that?
The Prime Minister did not in any way act illegally when he prorogated Parliament. That is provided for in the Constitution of Lesotho. It is within the right of the Prime Minister to make sure that he brings stability in government. He brings stability in the whole country. And one of the mechanisms he can use when he realizes that his government is at stake is to prorogate or suspend Parliament. And that is not challengeable in any court of law in this land. And he has that right to defend or to protect his government.
But some people are suggesting that he prorogated Parliament to avoid a vote of no confidence because he knows he will be thrown out.
No. That is not a fact. That is a fallacy. It is a fallacy in the sense that people who are proposing a motion of no confidence in the Prime Minister are running away from their court cases. And when I talk about people, I'm talking about the Deputy Prime Minister and a few ministers that belong to the LCD. They have corruption cases in the court of law. And the Prime Minister has vowed that he will fight corruption. He even mentioned this thing during the United States Africa Leaders Forum, which was held in Washington recently, where he stood up in front of President Barack Obama and he said, we don't care what happens. I, as the Prime Minister of Lesotho, will fight corruption until the bitter end, regardless of who is subject of corruption, including myself as the Prime Minister.
Thabo Takalikwala is the spokesman for Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Maseru. The government of South Sudan says a decree issued by the country's labor ministry ordering the dismissal of foreign nationals and replacing them with South Sudanese workers has been misunderstood. Mugumi Davis Rakharinji has details from South Sudan's capital, Juba.
South Sudanese Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Mariar Benjamin told reporters at a news conference today that the government is not going to expel foreigners who are working in the country.
Whether they are Ugandans or Kenyans or Ethiopians or Eritreans or Egyptians or whatever, the government of South Sudan is not expelling any foreign workers in this country. We would like this statement to be very clear.
On Monday, the Labour Ministry published a directive in newspapers in Juba ordering NGOs and private held businesses to fire foreign workers in specific jobs. Those jobs included top management positions, including executive directors and personnel officers. Today, Labour Minister Ngor Kolong Ngor issued a statement saying only low-level positions are being targeted. It says, and we quote, "By executive directors, we mean executive secretaries and secretaries," end of quote. UN agencies, diplomatic missions and organizations that have agreements with the government of South Sudan are excluded from the order, Ngor says in the statement. Mariari says the Labour Minister's circular was misquoted. He says the government is working on laws that will make clear who can be employed in what job in both the public and private sectors.
There are labor regulations that specify certain jobs for nationals, jobs that specify for non-nationals, like in any other country. And those will be later on discussed with these companies.
Louis de Brouwer, the operations director at the EU Commission's Humanitarian Aid and Civil Protection Department, says the EU understands the directive to mean that foreign employers should
pay attention to the local labor market. That is to say that what they ask is when the expertise which is needed is available on the local market, that the employer give preference to the expertise available on the local market.
Humanitarian agencies say the timing of the order is bad because it comes as millions of people face food shortages unless they receive aid. Laying off workers now and retraining others to take their jobs would be a recipe for disaster, the aid agencies say. But Mariari insists they won't be affected by the decree.
We care for our relations because we are not in isolation. We are not in the alien territory. We are in this world where we have neighbors. We interact. We do things together. We have a lot of countries in this country who are here to assist in humanitarian issues. They are assisting in development issues. They are supposed to stay here comfortably.
The government decree is set to take effect on October 15th. For VOA News, I am Gumedus Ruakarinj in Juba.
The United States this week resumed operations at its embassy in Bangui, which was closed in December 2012 when then-President Francois Bozize was ousted by the Muslim rebel group Seleka. Anne Richer, Assistant Secretary of State for Population, Refugees and Migration, says the Central African Republic and its people are at a crucial juncture and that the United States is determined to help make this moment of opportunity a success.
Last weekend, we resumed operations at our embassy in Bangui. David Brown is serving as the charge d'affaires ad interim, and he's working closely with the transitional government and with international friends and international organizations to advance a peaceful, democratic, inclusive political transition. And one of the first things he did on his arrival in Bangui was to announce an additional $28 million in U.S. humanitarian assistance, which brings the total we've provided this year to $146 million.
Besides the humanitarian assistance, what is the most pressing issue that you'd say the United States would want to see happening in the Central African Republic?
Well, we really want to stop the cycle of violence in the Central African Republic. This country is at a critical juncture, and we think that the United States can help foster a broad-based, inclusive dialogue between Muslims and Christians, and also including people who have been displaced, who have been forced from their homes and either fled within the country or been forced to flee to neighboring countries.
How concerned are you about reports that soon after, you know, you resumed operations in the Central African Republic, there were reports of UN peacekeepers who were killed?
Well, I can assure you that the security of the embassy has been in the forefront of the minds of many of my State Department colleagues who are involved in determining whether we could reopen the embassy and the ambassador's residence. I myself traveled a few months ago to the Central African Republic, but was only allowed a day trip in and out because of security concerns.
That was Anne Richer, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Population, Refugees and Migration. She was speaking with Sandra Nyanyira of U.S. Zimbabwe Service. President Barack Obama is repeating his pledge to not embroil the United States military in another ground war in Iraq. His remarks to American forces in Florida come a day after the country's top military commander told Congress that he would recommend sending a U.S. combat troops to Iraq if it were to become necessary.
I will not commit you and the rest of our armed forces to fighting another ground war in Iraq. After a decade of massive ground deployments, it is more effective to use our unique capabilities in support of partners on the ground so they can secure their own country's futures. If there is a need for a rescue mission, when the world is threatened, when the world needs help, it calls on America. Even the countries that complain about America, when they need help, who do they call? They call us.
That's U.S. President Barack Obama speaking Wednesday to American forces in Florida. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African sports news, we begin with netball. Uganda upset hosts Botswana 47-32 at the African Netball World Cup qualifiers in Gaborone on Wednesday. Now, Zambia outplayed Namibia 54-47, while Zimbabwe overpowered Swaziland 71-35. Turning to football, the Democratic Republic of Congo's AS Vita striker Ete Kiama Agiti Tadi is suspended for 2 years, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, disclosed in Cairo, Egypt on Wednesday. Tadi played for AS Vita and Rwanda's national team using a Congo and Rwanda passports bearing different names and dates of birth. This discrepancy precipitated Rwanda's disqualification from the ongoing 2015 Orange African Cup of Nations qualifiers. Staying with CAF, Algeria's Entente Setif will host the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe in their Orange Africa Champions League semi-final behind closed doors this coming weekend, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, revealed on Wednesday. CAF ruled that Entente Setif will miss the support of their fans during the match owing to their unruly behavior targeting visiting teams during the group stage of the contest. Meanwhile, based on recent Orange African Cup of Nations qualifiers, South Africa's Bafana Bafana is among teams that seem to have reversed their fortunes in African football, coming off a 3-0 away win against Sudan and for the first time snatching a point from Nigeria in their scoreless draw at home. Coach Ephraim Sheikhs Mashaba, who is back in charge of Bafana Bafana after a decade, reckons this is a sign of better things to come when playing Republic of Congo next month.
We can only hope it's a start of consistency in getting results, because it won't help us now. We're going back, we come back, we rusted and we don't do anything. I think, yes, I'd like to say it's a good start for the team and the country as a whole. Get to Congo, get another 3 points, then we are say we can cruise into the Africa Cup of Nations 2015.
That was Ephraim Sheikhs Mashaba, head coach of South Africa's Bafana Bafana, speaking in Cape Town, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A French staff member of Doctors Without Borders has contracted the Ebola virus while working in Liberia. The humanitarian relief organization announced in a press release on Wednesday that the woman, who was on assignment in Monrovia, was placed in isolation on Tuesday after developing a fever. She will be taken to France for treatment. And an attack Wednesday on a teacher training college in northern Nigeria killed at least 15 people and wounded dozens after gunmen opened fire on a lecture hall. That's it for this Thursday, September 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very peaceful and healthy Thursday.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. Right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked. VOA Africa, don't miss.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.